like a rocket.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. AIG's stock price has soared in the last month. The troubled insurance company posted its first quarterly profit in 2 years, and now there's talk about some reconciliation with the former head of AIG. That talk was enough to give the company shares an almost 30% boost yesterday. The latest from Marketplace's Steve Henn.
Robert Ben-Moshe took over the helm of AIG earlier this month. One of his first moves was to try and make peace with Hank Greenberg. Greenberg is AIG's controversial founder, former CEO, and is still the company's largest private shareholder. In 2005, he was pushed out of AIG amid allegations of accounting fraud, and earlier this month, he paid the SEC a multi-million-dollar fine. Still, over the last few years, Greenberg has been a fierce critic of the company and its executives. But new CEO Ben-Moshe isn't treating Hank Greenberg like a toxic asset. Ben-Moshe told reporters that despite Greenberg's problems, he can still, quote, help with the solutions. Many investors believe the detente could help AIG attract new sources of private capital. The hobbled insurance giant still owes the federal government more than $180 billion. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Let's check numbers. European shares are higher right now. London's FTSE by 1%. Shares in Frankfurt and Paris are up 1.5%. In Paris, cosmetics and beauty company L'Oreal posted its highest stock gain in 9 months. Asian shares closed mixed today. Nikkei up, Hang Seng down. The Chinese benchmark dove 2.8%. Wall Street yesterday, a better-than-expected GDP revision helped boost stocks there. The S&P added 0.25%, NASDAQ a little less than that. The Dow made it 8 in a row in the green. It rose 37 points to close at 95.80. The mood at a natural gas conference wrapping up in Houston today isn't exactly upbeat. Natural gas prices recently took a dive to a 7-year low. Bad news for business, but what does it mean for consumers? From the Sustainability Desk, here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
Unlike oil, which the U.S. mostly gets from other countries, natural gas is a truly domestic fuel. Nearly 90% of the natural gas consumed here comes from U.S. wells. And thanks to improved technology, those wells are producing more gas than they ever have.
Right at the time when demand went away.
That's Houston analyst David Purcell with Tudor Pickering Holt. He says the combination of the recession and a cool summer have gutted demand for natural gas. And since there are few options for storing the stuff, that oversupply continues to drive prices downward. Purcell says that doesn't bode well for the future.
Low prices are a good thing. Really low prices are not, because really low prices aren't sustainable.
Meaning it's harder for natural gas producers to turn a profit, which means they're less likely to drill new wells. And that, Purcell says, is a recipe for a spike in prices once demand picks back up again. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
A new poll out today says most Americans support the way President Barack Obama is dealing with energy issues. That includes his plans to limit greenhouse gases with the controversial cap-and-trade approach. The Washington Post ABC News survey shows 55% of Americans approve of the way the president's handling energy issues, 30% disapprove. Those numbers are in contrast to support for his health care proposals that keep slipping.
American Public Media presents the Scratchpad blog. Host Scott Jagow keeps you updated on business news worth talking about. Available daily at marketplace.org.
Musicians used to think selling songs to commercials was pure sacrilege. But changes in the record industry have many artists reconsidering the ultimate sin. Reporter Raphael Cohen has more.
Greg Weeks has a big deadline coming up. He's the guitarist and singer in an indie band from Philadelphia called Espers. The band's releasing a new album in October. What they've got sounds pretty good, but Week says there's a lot missing.
Brooke has her guitar part to put down, and Helena has her cello.
There are no vocals yet either, but the band might not need them for the album to start making money. Espers plans to mix an instrumental version, not for fans, but for advertisers.
There's a trend in advertising to use pre-recorded music.
Dawn Sutter-Maydell co-owns Agoraphone. It's a music supervision company. She helps place songs in TV shows, movies, and ads. She says advertisers like instrumental versions of songs because they feel more hip and authentic than jingles. Maydell says when she started in the business, getting this kind of music from bands was nearly impossible.
It was a stigma 10 years ago that bands were really unwilling to license their music and to have it be associated with a product.
Today, bands like Seattle's The Postal Service have boosted their exposure by licensing songs to companies like UPS.
It's not customer service, it's your customer service.
Maydell says more musicians are getting used to the idea that their music could be used in ads. Some are even embracing it.
I think that there are some bands that write music with licensing in mind. And I think that there are bands that continue to do their art, and sometimes it works out.
Advertisers can pay in the six figures for an established band's song. An indie band like Esper's might get between $20,000 and $60,000. But aren't these bands selling out? Weeks says there are some companies he wouldn't want using his music, but he doesn't seem too fussy.
You know, hey, if I get, you know, $100,000 to promote a tampon ad, tampons are used by everybody. They're good. So why should I have a problem with that?
That's a question a lot of musicians are asking themselves. Record sales have been falling since 2004. So for most bands, selling a song to an advertiser might be the difference between rocking full-time and having to work a day job. In New York, I'm Raphael Cohen for Marketplace.
Finally, if you're going to insure a moon rock for $500,000, you might want to make sure it's really a moon rock. In Amsterdam, the Dutch National Museum, it's called the Rijksmuseum, for years displayed a tennis ball-sized reddish piece of stone. It was a gift from the United States to the former prime minister in 1969 after the Apollo 11 moon mission. Turns out the rock is really just a piece of petrified wood. The State Department employee who gave the item to the prime minister told a Dutch broadcaster he knows nothing about where the rock came from. A museum spokeswoman says, quote, "We can laugh about it," end quote. Just not all the way to the bank. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here. Have a great Friday and a very nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.